Carmine Red from Nintendo World Report checking in, and our episode 220 Shantae Half Genie Hero download code prizes are ready to go. In the European region, our winners are Adam Dolphin and Barry O'Halloran, and in the Americas region, we have WJ Hard 63 and Pure Evil. Check your emails. Entered and didn't win? Missed the contest entirely? Don't worry, there's lots going on at NintendoWorldReport.com. In fact, right now we're giving out a Legend of Zelda Art and Artifacts hardcover art book. Details are on our Patreon page. No purchase necessary.
Everybody, it's Neil Ronahan here with Nintendo World Report TV, and I'm joined by my old compatriots from the NWR newscast, which, most likely if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to this on an MP3, you might have no idea about who those people are. little bit of background. We used to do a podcast on Nintendo World Report called Newscast that started in 2009. A bunch of us were on it, I think, until like it ended in like 2011 or 2012 and became the podcast that is still known as NWR Connectivity on Nintendo World Report. But we're reuniting to talk about Dragon Quest VIII. And those people that are talking about Dragon Quest VIII with me are Andy Gergen.
What's up?
Zach Miller.
What's up?
And Nathan Mustafa.
Hey, it's me. I'm still irrelevant.
You're relevant to me.
I mean, we're relevant in that all of us are playing Dragon Quest VIII right now. That is the latest Nintendo
video game. I might be literally doing it right now. You don't know because you can't see
Zach.
Me.
Zach, put it down. Stop. Your monster team doesn't need to win right now. So Dragon Quest VIII is a game that initially came out on the PS2 more than 10 years ago. And this remake, it's more of a port, I would say, than a remake. I mean, like, very much so. Like, this is the PS2 game in 3DS form, which with some differences. Andy, we were just talking before we started talking. You played this on PlayStation 2. Like, how does it compare?
God, I wish I remembered more about it. I got this game. It was a random GameStop pickup. 2007, I think around March. And I didn't know anything about it. I hadn't played a Dragon Quest since Dragon Quest 1. But it was one of those things, I think, where I wanted an RPG, and I was just in GameStop, like on IGN, looking up reviews of games that looked interesting, and I grabbed Dragon Quest VIII on just a fluke, and I was really surprised at how much I liked it. But I don't play a lot of RPGs, and the reason I don't play a lot of RPGs is that even games that I like, I don't tend to stick around for. Most RPGs, even the ones that I really like, it's rare that I get past the 10-ish hour mark. So I'm kind of hoping I will get past that this time around on 3DS. But what I remember about the game was just, it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous and it was simple, because the reason I don't play a lot of RPGs, one of the reasons that RPGs are a turnoff for me, is just because I feel like they're overwhelming with regards to like the
systems. Too many systems,
yeah. Yeah, they want you to learn shit that I don't have the patience for. Dragon Quest VIII is in a lot of ways a throwback, and I didn't play 2 through 7, so I can't speak to how much Dragon Quest VIII is evolving straight in a straight line, or how much it is legitimately a throwback to Dragon Quest I. But if you've ever played a Dragon Quest game dating all the way back to Dragon Quest I, Dragon Quest VIII will feel very familiar to you immediately.
Yeah,
there's a lot of music that carries over. There's the basic combat system really hasn't changed, other than in Dragon Quest I, you have a single character and you get more characters in Dragon Quest VIII.
And lots, you know, there the are, same spells and enemies.
Yeah,
although I think they all, if you played Dragon Quest back in like the 90s or the 80s, I guess, when did Dragon Warrior come out on NES? But regardless, if you played it before 2000, I believe all the spells have different names.
Oh, really?
Maybe. I think eight was the one where they kind of like, because this was the first one that was actually called Dragon Quest in North America. There was some weird copyright issue.
The Game Boy Color re-releases, if what you're saying is true, the Game Boy Color re-releases renamed the spells to be consistent with current Dragon Quest games.
Yeah, those versions, and along with Dragon Warrior Monsters, were the games that really got me into RPGs back on the Game Boy Color.
Nice.
This is a very special place, Dragon Quest, the franchise, for me.
I'm kind of sad I never played the Game Boy remakes of the original games, because I played the crap out of Dragon Warrior Monsters, but for some reason that just went past me. Like I still have Dragon Warrior on the NES, and I played that. I don't know if I really liked it that much, but I was a young child who had a lot of free time, so I played the crap out of Dragon Warrior.
I wish these would have come out on the 3DS Virtual Console.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that.
Or the NES Classic.
Right. Yeah, like I wish Square would support Virtual Console on the 3DS, Wii U, Switch, whatever.
Yeah.
Like I want a lot of their games to be able to be played.
Quite frankly, I would even be amenable to a full price Final Fantasy VI Advance style re-release of some of those old games.
Mm. Yeah.
Like they got away with that. Chrono Trigger. I'm not sure. Was Chrono Trigger ever a full price DS game?
Yeah, I think it was $30
or $40. Yeah.
Yeah, 30. Yeah, because there was a Square tax on DS.
Yep.
And they did release the Zenithian trilogy on DS.
I mean, if you put a quality port of Final Fantasy VI that didn't really add anything new, but just ran well and the interface was slick, I'd probably pay at least 20 for that.
I'd be mad about it, don't get me wrong.
But I would pay it, because I think Final Fantasy VI is one of the best games ever made. I've still never beat it, but I've gotten to the end. And the problem is that, like, you can play it on the Vita, but the load times suck, and you can play it on Wii, but you're playing it on your TV. I mean, Final Fantasy VI has not gotten the love that, like, 7 and 4, apparently, and even 5 have gotten, because 6 was next in line for that DS remake, and we never got it.
Oh, interesting.
I think that was hearsay, because I remember hearing stuff that... Why we always see Final Fantasy IV keep kicking around is I think a lot of the creative team on that still is in a decision-making position at Square, whereas I think a lot of the creatives behind Final Fantasy VI either aren't with the company or aren't in game development anymore.
That's too bad.
You know, Neil,
so that sucks.
Your initial questioning, Andy, about how this compares to the original version, I did buy the original on PS2. I tried to play it. I didn't get into it. I tried to play it on mobile. And then I recently tried to load my disc onto an emulator and play it upgraded to 1080p. And it is an audio visual treat. But I would say that the game translates pretty well. I was surprised that I haven't experienced any of the frame rate issues that people kind of were complaining about online.
That was the story of this game on 3DS for me, like for years. Like, Dragon Quest VII, which we'll probably talk a little bit about as we get into this, because it kind of compares as being another 3DS game, 3DS remake of the series. But when Dragon Quest VII and Dragon Quest VIII got announced for North America, I was excited. I never played either of those games before. And everybody said, like, oh, yeah, the Dragon Quest VII remake is pretty well done. It updates a game that was really kind of impenetrable on PlayStation 1, and Dragon Quest VIII is a buggy mess. So I kind of had... Like, I was way more excited for Dragon Quest VII and was very muted on Dragon Quest VIII.
Yeah.
And now that I'm playing it, and we're only gonna talk about the first 5 to 10 hours. If you want to play along with us, get up to the end of Myella Abbey and then come back. But I'm 15, 20 hours into this game at this point, and I've had zero issues other than, like, sometimes battles take a while to load. Like, that's the worst that I've seen.
Yeah, and so, not even that long.
A little bit of context for the listening audience. I was just telling the guys before we recorded that my 3DS broke. My new 3DS XL has a broken L button, and it is all my fault. I dropped the damn thing. So I am forced, not forced, I could play the thing with the analog nub for camera control, and I might until I send it off. But I did pop the game into my kid's 2DS because I kind of was just curious how the game would run. And you know what? It runs pretty damn well on the 2DS. It looks fine, and it has a decent – the frame rate is fine. Like, I didn't notice any tangible difference, so I don't think this game is benefiting from new 3DS other than the analog nub as far as I can tell.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because it does have the analog nub. I think it came out in 2015 in Japan.
They must have just done a lot of cleanup on it.
Yeah.
So you're saying the original game in Japan came out before new 3DS was even really a thing, or at least the bulk of the work would have been put into it.
Yeah, new 3DS. But I'm gonna check to confirm.
New 3DS came out here in like February of 2015.
Yes, it came out on 3DS in Japan in August 2015.
Well, okay.
I mean, it supports the nub, which is more than most games do.
Yeah.
But I don't think it has any tangible difference on new 3DS other than that.
Doesn't seem to.
So I guess one more thing before we start talking about specifics of the game. Dragon Quest VII is a 3DS game a 3DS remake of the game that preceded this. Nathan, I believe that you finished that, right?
Yeah, I clocked in a little over 100 hours, and it totally took me by surprise. But I loved it.
I wound up, I think I'm about like 20, 25 hours into that, but then I dropped it to move on to 8. It was really slow for me to get into Dragon Quest VII, and I only like recently just got to the job system. So maybe that will kind of open things up more. But I kind of like how, even though Dragon Quest VIII does have the vignette style storytelling, that there's something more connective tying it all together. Like, I did like a lot of the singular stories in Dragon Quest VII, but it would kind of suck that, like, it would happen, and then, like, it would be, like, basically that, okay, now that story's done, move on.
Yeah, I think you definitely made the right move, just moving on to 8. while I really enjoyed my time with 7, and I played the other Dragon Quests as well, but the amount of kind of soul that's in this version 8, it surpasses 7. The characters have no depth in 7,
right?
Yeah, they're like that, very faceless. Like, it's like he's
Dragon,
a prince,
like Dragon
a
Quest 9 faceless,
not quite that faceless. They actually have like names,
okay,
and some kind of background, but it's like that background becomes largely irrelevant as you get deeper into the story, it seems.
Gotcha.
And I really like 9. I could go for a Dragon Quest 9 HD remake, if you will.
Yeah. Probably put 200 hours at least into that game.
Yeah, I mean, 9 was fantastic, but almost for different reasons than 8. Yeah. And I can totally, having played a good chunk of 8 now, I can totally see why people who really loved 8 played 9 and were like, what the hell? Because it is a totally different
game outside
of the gameplay. But let's talk about how Dragon Quest VIII is outside of its Dragon Quest gameplay, which is kind of a series staple, if you will. But the story of this game is that you start off playing as this hero who, you know, looks like a good old Akira Toriyama hero, where you look at him and you squint and you're like, Chrono? But it starts off with him and his buddy Yangus, who is this big cantankerous, like, pirate dude.
Cool, blimey!
Yeah, who keeps on calling the hero the Gov. The hero, I'll continue to refer to him as the hero, because that's kind of what he's talked about in, like, I guess, like, kind of the marketing and overall plot of this game, but you name him whatever you want. But so the hero and Yangus are traveling around with King Troad, who has been transformed into a toad, and Medea, a horse, who used to be a princess. And it kind of starts off just right in the thick of things. You get attacked by slimes, and then you're heading off into a town to try to meet up with someone because King Trode is now a toad, and the kingdom of Trodane is in ruins, and you're trying to find Dolmagus. So the town of Fairbury, where you first start off, there's not a whole hell of a lot happens there, but I guess, does anybody have anything to say about like that introduction to the world?
I would say that just with respect to introducing the characters, right away they establish little quirks for each of them. And you know, you mentioned Yangus likes to refer to you as Gov. I think it was really smart that they gave the hero the little mouse in his pocket.
Oh, yeah.
And he kind of has like some very small gameplay components to him where you kind of run around as a mouse for a little bit, but it gives him a little bit of extra personality that doesn't require him to speak because he's a silent protagonist. And I like that.
Yeah, I actually totally forgot about the mouse, but like you can also, can't you use cheese in battle to get the mouse to come out?
I don't know if the mouse comes out. I think it just gives you a stat boost. I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
I thought they said something about using cheese in battle for the mouse, but I haven't tried it. So
yeah, that's probably something that I heard about the other day, but I haven't messed around with. But I did like the sequence where you run around as the mouse.
Yeah.
Like, stuff like I like how there's a lot of kind of diversions like that where they change up the gameplay, or like you'll go to a town. And I guess maybe I'll shut up because we haven't really. Well, I guess poor Prospect's kind of like that, where it's like you go to a town and there's not really anything wrong. It's just like poor Prospect, you just like fight a big calamari. Like that's really it. Like there's nothing major going on. And I like that they kind of have the restraint to not make like everything like climactic diabolical nonsense. Like it's kind of more toned down in a way where it's more personal. Like I mean Fairbury, the whole issue there is that there's this this fortune teller named Calderasha who threw his crystal ball down a well. And then you have to go to a cave and then fight this monster who got hit on the head by the crystal ball. Just like kind of charming and dumb. And that's a lot. I like that because it reminds me a lot of Fantasy Life, which Fantasy Life is probably heavily inspired by a lot of Dragon Quest stuff anyway, where
same developer, right? Level 5.
It is. Dragon Quest VIII is developed by Level 5, who Nintendo fans would recognize from Yo-Kai Watch in the Professor Layton series.
And Fantasy Life.
Yeah, and Fantasy Life as well. But Fantasy Life would have these moments where it'd be just kind of like, oh, like this guy's totally evil, and it's like, oh no, it's just a prank war. And that's kind of how the Fairbury stuff feels a little bit, although it does kind of set off the chain of events with Dolmagus being a little more diabolical.
They do add these nice little touches. I like how small the dungeons generally are. I like how there aren't load times when you're going in between floors in the dungeons. They just feel really cohesive. They have little narratives inside of them. Like the first dungeon you go in, the waterfall dungeon. I like the boss. I mean, you spend some time talking to the boss. There's a merchant walking around in there who got lost, and he kind of has nothing to do with your goal of being in the dungeon, but they throw those little extra touches in there.
I like that. I believe in the PlayStation 2 version, from what I've read, is that you didn't get maps right away. You had to find them in the dungeons. In this game, you just get the maps, which there are some dungeons that I've noticed as I've played that seem totally like there's a complete dead end to like nothing. And I'm like, oh, if I didn't have a map,
that explains a lot, actually.
Yeah. That was part of the reason why I actually looked it up. There's no treasure chest at the end of this. Why would I can see that it's just a dead end. What's the point? And it's because if you didn't have a map yet, it's usually early on in dungeons too. I noticed that happens.
I will say I'm simultaneously playing Dragon Quest Builders on PS4, and I am appreciating the number of items and monsters and just corollaries between those two games. They do
the sounds too.
The sounds, yeah. There's a lot of things that those two games have in common. I haven't played a lot of Dragon Quest games in my day, so it's kind of fun to hear all of the stuff kind of very cohesive. Everything, every Dragon Quest game feels distinctly like a Dragon Quest game.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm moving forward with the story. Dolmagus, we find out he killed Master Rylus, which is a dude in that town that you were trying to meet up with who apparently helped like teach Dolmagus. So that sucks. But then you move on to Alexandria and we get introduced to Zach's love of his life, Jessica. Mm.
Jessica.
So I guess Zach, just tell us about Jessica. Who's she? By the end of the segment in Alexandria.
Well, let's try to keep this a little short. Zach, why don't you tell us two things you like about Jessica?
I really like her her attitude, and she's a really good mage. There, suck on that.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I like using the whip with her.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back to the whip. You know, the problem with her being a mage, powering up her stave skill, is that if you take her stave away, she loses all those spells.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to commit to one or the other.
But, actually, does that? Because I leveled up her stave skill a little bit, and I still have all those spells.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe they changed that.
I would be surprised. The skills you get from leveling up would have anything to do with the spells she knows.
Yeah, I mean, she learns spells as she levels up, but then she will gain more spells by putting skill points into staves.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I did that, and I have Kasap as a spell, and I got that from leveling up her stave.
Okay. Interesting. Well,
but yeah, so she's the third playable character. Her background is that her brother was murdered and she wants revenge. She's supposed to be married off to some putz, but she's not into that.
Who you never see again.
Yeah. He just disappears. but you wind up chasing her to the Tower of Alexandria. And then you found out more about Dolmagus. Is there anything else notable about Alexandria?
You use the mouse to run around and
sneak around a lady's room.
Note, yeah.
I will tell you that I walked around that outside of that tower for about 20 minutes trying to figure out how to get in before I just Googled it and learned that I had to go talk to Bangers and Mash.
Yeah, well, you know what I did is that so I talked to I think Bangers is the one you have to talk to. I talked to Mash and walked away. Oh, and God. Was like, what do I do? And then, like, I looked it up online. I'm like, I did that. And then I was like, wait, did I only talk to one of them?
That sucks.
Which is frustrating because that was, like, one of the first places that I went because I'm like, maybe I have to talk to the kids. And then, like,
I never ran into that problem. Yeah, I'm further behind in the game than all of you. And part of that has to do with my need to click on everything.
Oh, I do too.
So, oh my gosh. Nope, didn't run into that problem. I talked to everybody, and I didn't even know that you could potentially get stuck there.
Yeah. I break every pot. I read every bookshelf.
Yep.
I open every dresser.
I do love how you just like walk into people's houses, and you're just like
taking their shit,
like breaking things. Like I went to
once you get a thieves key, I like going in the Fairweather or Fairbury. You can go in the back entrance of the shop and just take his shit out of a treasure chest.
There's a guy in Port Prospect who can't get into his chest, and he's lamenting that. You go unlock it for him, and he goes, "Oh, I'm so happy you unlocked it for me. Please take what's inside.
Take everything."
How do you get the thieves? Whatever you just said.
You alchemize an iron nail and a
bronze knife.
Yeah.
Important, actually. I picked that up in game. Port Prospect. If you go to like the top of the wall, or no, it's
the alchemy recipe is in the next place.
Yeah, it's not Port Prospect. It's the place that you take the boat to.
Yeah,
Peregrine Quay. There's like a tower there that you go to the top, and then they talk about like, oh, if you get a bronze knife and an iron nail, and then they give you an iron nail,
and you can go buy a bronze knife right there.
Mm-hmm. I think
that's right. The guy with the chest was in Peregrine Quay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Here's a quick hint for everybody. You can get there are going to be treasure chests that even Thief Key cannot open, but you get a kind of a master key in the Trodain Castle, and that solves your problem.
Yeah.
Nice.
Spoiler.
Yeah, kind of.
Spoiler, you go to the castle of the characters that you're playing as.
That they're constantly talking about?
Yeah, right. And they keep on being like, we need to get there eventually. I like the story in Alexandria. It's probably, it might be one of my favorite vignettes so far.
Yeah, it's definitely the best character introduction.
Yeah.
Genghis gets backstory later on, I think, in Pick'em, but it's not quite as good. You don't see him doing it.
Yeah.
Whereas Jessica, you kind of see her leaving her family and being very determined. And then Angelo just sucks. I'm sorry. He just sucks.
Well, yeah, with Jessica, like, there's that moment after you get to the end of Tower Alexandria where, like, you just leave her and she's sobbing because, like, her brother's dead. Her brother possessed a statue after he died. And then, like, he's like, I have to tell you about who killed me. And then he's like, now I'm gone forever. And, like, there was a, like, I just, like, stood there after that where you just hear, like, this woman sobbing in the background. And you're like, shit, what do I do? Like, do I talk to her? And it's just like, she's just like, just leave me alone.
Yeah.
So then I just evac'd out.
Yep.
Angelo seems like some weird loner kid, and I guess that's kind of what he is, who's watched too much TV and is mimicking it, but everyone somehow buys into it.
Well, it reminds me of, like, and this is, like, I haven't watched Sailor Moon in, like, 15 years, but, like, he just seems like Tuxedo Mask. Like, kind of what comes to mind. But yeah, so after Alexandria, you go to Port Prospect. The one notable thing about that is you get introduced to the photo component. That's new for the PDF version. Which, Andy, you were saying that you haven't gotten into this as much, but I think this might be one of my favorite additions to this game.
Absolutely.
Because it's just like, it's like you basically just get like a list of side quests that encourage you to explore the world around you. It's almost like achievements to some degree.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Where it's just kind of like, and there's usually a kind of a riddle in the different photo quests as well, where it'll be like, oh, like you need to, you know, kill 30 of this monster and then look for a gold monster. Or like there's something in the basement of the Abbey, like you should investigate it and take a picture and show me.
I may yet come back to this. I think it's kind of overwhelming to like know that there's this giant list of 5,000 check marks.
Well, no, you know what's nice about the list, Andy, is that it populates as you move through the game, so you have plenty of chances to look at the list. You'll have like 10 things on the list to begin with, maybe it's 5, and you're like, okay, I can do this, and you do it, and then you start. And, you know, it's very easy to just keep going while you're playing the game.
Yeah, and you can sort it by region as well.
And I would say, I haven't spoiled it sooner. I'm sorry.
I haven't spoiled in the fact that one of the things you need to do is take a picture of a gold slime. So I did that, and it told me I had completed challenge 93. And I was like, oh, I'm never going to complete challenges 1 through 92. Screw that.
They are presented to you out of order. So don't worry about that. I would say start sooner rather than later, because eventually that will happen. You will have 93 stacked up.
Yeah.
So
there was a similar quest and a similar thing in Wind Waker, wasn't there? And I never did that either.
The treasure maps.
That always seemed
overwhelming. Or even just the photo, the picto box stuff.
Yeah, the picto box stuff, where you had a camera and you were encouraged to take a picture of.
Yeah.
You were encouraged to take a picture of, I think, every NPC or maybe every monster in the game.
There's a lot of missable ones that you have to get on the first try.
And then you have to wait 3 days for the statue to be ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Quick question about the photo quest. Is there anything that I can miss on the first try?
I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
Because that's the kind of thing that makes me not want to do any of it. If I know I can't do all of it, I don't want to do any of it.
Nothing is like take a picture of this boss quick before you kill him.
No.
Okay. It's all stuff like there's a orange slime in the world. I'd like to see one. Take a picture of it. And you're like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it seems like the in-game rewards kind of scale based on the region you're in. So it would, you know, as you go back to do the older ones, the rewards may not be as enticing. Although there is one that gives you double experience that would be totally useful fighting them. Well, it's temporary.
I haven't used that yet. I need to use that.
It's temporary, and I'm saving it because I know eventually there will be an area that's just like filled with king metal slimes or something like that that, you know, drops a lot of XP anyways.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I'm not sure about is since I put my cartridge into the 2DS that my kid owns, it told me that my photo album would not carry over because it's all stored on the SD card, and I don't know if that has anything to do with the photo quest.
Might not. I doubt
might, it might not. So I kind of want to
Your system's fixed.
Yeah, like there's part of me that thinks maybe I should wait until I get my new 3DS back, and it's going to be probably about 2 or 3 weeks before I get it back. I probably won't even be able to send it off for a week or so. I probably will go to the photo quest. I will try to check it out. That does sound enticing.
And they're nice because you're actually rewarded with stuff.
Yeah.
You
have to always go back to that town to talk to that guy every time.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But okay. If you have Zoom, it's super easy.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's go to Port Prospect, go in, talk to him, leave.
So here's something that was crossing my mind as I was playing. I want to run it by you guys. On two occasions now, I have had one of my characters die during a boss fight. And in my brain, my logical brain, I'm thinking, I just lost out on a major grind opportunity for my characters.
Yeah. It
pisses me off because now I'm thinking, am I going to be permanently disadvantaged for this character unless I blow a half an hour grinding in the field?
No.
No, but it does suck that that happened to me early on. I think the hero died during the fight with the big squid in Port Prospect or something like that.
I think the hero might have died during Geyser or something like that, like the first boss. Like, it was very early on.
Yeah. My hero just made it first boss fight.
Well, Yangus finished it, and then I found out later that Yangus got all the XP and the hero got nothing.
Yeah, so Yangus, no, that happened to me.
Yangus is constantly one level ahead of everybody.
But then Yangus was disproportionate, but I feel like as he got to higher levels, that the hero had less experience needed between levels.
Oh, interesting.
Because now the hero is my highest level character.
Oh, well. Really? Oh.
Hmm. Yangus barely gets any skill points when he levels up. Oh, you got 2 skill points. Wonderful.
Well, I think they give you a lot early on, and then it kind of peters out. Like, it seems like everybody's getting, like, between 2 and 4 per level.
I ran into a weird problem where I maxed out my skill. I didn't max out. It just said, oh, by the way, you can't invest anymore in this skill for now. Until you're higher.
Oh, weird.
That's weird.
Yeah, because I was just dumping everything into fisticuffs because there are some good skills in there early on for doing a lot of damage to multiple enemies.
Huh. Yeah. So I guess that kind of segues nicely. So one of the cool things about this game is that in addition to leveling up, you also have all these skill points that you can put into 5 different categories for each character. It'll be 3 different weapons, fisticuffs, which is unarmed combat, and then kind of like a personality trait one. I'm curious, what are you guys like? Well, let's start with the hero. What are you guys dumping your skill points into for the hero?
Wait, before we say this, I want to say I fucking hate this system. Because the whole time I'm using it, I'm thinking I'm playing this game incorrectly.
Yes.
I wish that there was a way, even if you had to like pay money for it, maybe there is, of like being able to like respec.
Redistribute.
Yes.
Yeah. That's something they should have added.
Yeah.
So there's an interaction, there's a character interaction you have shortly before the end of where we played to, where someone literally tells you, hey, maybe it's best if you don't allocate your skill points until you know what you want to do.
And it's that would have been great to hear 4 hours ago, Derek. Right.
A, I would have liked to have heard that 4 hours ago, and B, that sucks because I want the stuff.
Yeah. Well, also, is there a way to read what the skills do?
No. You have to go online.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's great. Save them up and just, what, invest blindly based on... The little name of the
stock
skill.
Market of Dragon Quest.
Well, like they, like for instance, okay, swords versus lances. That's one of the decisions that I've had to make with my main hero character. And it's like at the end of the day, I don't know what the real difference is between a sword and a lance, other than sometimes when you go to a town, there's a new sword to buy, and sometimes when you go to a town, there's a new lance to buy. Like, and the graphics look different. But from a gameplay perspective, if I'm supposed to be deciding which I prefer, swords or lances, I don't know how I make that decision.
I don't think you can carry a shield when you carry a lance.
Oh, that's good to know, I guess.
I did a lot of reading into it too before I allocated a single skill point because I hate this stuff.
I should have done that.
And apparently, swords, your damage can ultimately go higher, and you have more opportunities to get nicer swords towards the end of the game.
Oh. Whenever I see the fisticuffs option, I convince myself that if I go entirely in that route, eventually I'll be glad that I did. But
I think when am early I going to be unarmed?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Is part of the fun of this game is buying new weapons.
Yeah,
but you know, maybe if you make Yangus into you know, Hagar for Final Fight.
Well, that's exactly what I've done. I put all the points I could into Fisticuffs, and it eventually said, like, when I got to, like, 53 points, it said, no, why don't you cool down on that for a little bit? Go do something else. Because the thin air technique is awesome. It hits all the enemies for a pretty good amount of damage for only 2 MP.
Oh, jeez. Okay, wow. Back to Fisticuffs.
I think I'm going to start focusing on
Fisticuffs. Maybe I'll bail on the clubs. So
when you're grinding out levels and having Yangus, like this in the earlier areas, just be able to smack everybody for 45 damage, and that's at a lower level.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for that reason, that's why I went Boomerang with the hero. And that was a little bit because I was using Boomerangs a lot in Dragon Quest VII, which I was playing right before this. And having that, like, it's just good, like, and I actually usually have, like, a sword or a lance kind of on standby because, like, if I'm fighting a boss who's by himself, it's not as good to have the Boomerang.
Right.
But having the Boomerang when I'm just, like, fighting random enemies because it attacks every single enemy, it's just very helpful for kind of grinding and exploring the overworld.
But you can swap weapons on the fly, right? Like, if you have a sword and a lance on your character's inventory...
Yeah. I don't know if you can do it.
Not during battles.
Not during battle.
But then by doing that, you forego the bonuses to attack damage that you get with the skills.
Okay.
And then for Yangus, I went club, which is more than, like, I had a good club early on. When I did a little reading about it, apparently axes are way better than clubs.
I did do axes.
So with Jessica, I went with a whip, much for the same reason as I went with the Boomerang for the hero, just because it was useful for
crowd control.
And then, I mean, for boss battles, I'm usually using magic with her anyway. So
yeah, I should go back to whip with her.
Do you guys?
None of my characters can really attack like the entire field right now.
Do you guys feel at all compelled to make yourself balanced and not let any one category lag behind? Because I feel like you should let one category lag behind, but I can't bring myself to do that.
I think you have to. I think it's a necessity.
Yeah, if you even out everything, you won't get even halfway up each ladder.
I'm not talking about evening out everything. I'm talking about, like, Jessica, for instance, I didn't do anything with knives. But then, like, I got to a point where I thought to myself, okay, I have everything else at like 10 or more. I really should put something in knives just so I can say that I didn't leave it completely alone.
I should just leave it alone.
I don't think anyone's going to check in on you and say something condescending. Oh, I see you didn't put anything in the knives. Well, you don't get to fight the final boss.
Yeah. You get to the final boss, and the final boss is like, well, if you put something in the knives, you would already beat me. But
this goes into Zach's comment about playing it wrong, because I convince myself that at the end of the day, if I don't have at least one knife skill by getting to like 6 points, that the end boss becomes dramatically more difficult. Like, I feel like this may not actually be a thing that ever happens, but I feel like I read about it all the time where if you don't do this one, this one weird trick, suddenly you're screwed 60 hours.
Yeah. My worry is just that, like, do I do axes or clubs? I won't know which one's better in 50 hours.
Yeah.
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 I mean, that's why, like I regret it, because apparently axes are better than clubs.
I went club early, and
I'm real deep in the club at this point.
Yeah, I feel like I also make the mistake of just putting the points towards whatever weapon I happen to have right now, whatever the best weapon was at the last town that I was at.
I see.
Yeah, so I think that's at least for now. We'll revisit that when we come back to talk more about this game. But I guess we'll finish up this first episode of our Dragon Quest VIII Game Club.
Wait, I have a question.
What? Okay.
Have any of you felt the need to grind?
Yes.
Had to grind?
Yeah, when I went up against Calamari.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
I felt like maybe either I wasn't picking up on his attack patterns or what, but I felt it was just easier to run around, and I hadn't messed around with the photos at that point, so it was a good opportunity for me to kind of
there you go.
Run around the game world and take in the sights and also level up for the boss.
That's what I really like about the photo mode, because it's kind of like I'll get to an area and I'll kind of be like, all right, what photos can I get right now? Do some of them. And then as I get like near the end of an area, I did it in like Myella Abbey, for example. Like I was getting near the end of that and I was like, all right, I'm going to go do all the photo mode stuff and kind of just bomb around and grind.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why I'm so into that photo mode, is because it just kind of is like something else to do while grinding.
Yeah,
and like there's a tangible reward for grinding that's not just gaining levels.
I haven't found myself compelled to grind. I find myself grinding just as a matter of I'm playing the game without, but I know I don't have time to really get to the next story beat. So I'll just, you know, sit back on the couch, watch some TV, and wander around hitting A and wandering in circles. It's a way of killing time with a game, you know.
I will say that unless you're looking to do that specifically, the encounter rate and the fact that they've eliminated random encounters is awesome. And it's better than in Dragon Quest VII, you were just falling over enemies.
Yeah.
Like the especially in dungeons in Dragon Quest VII, like the enemies were unavoidable.
Wow.
But yeah, in Dragon Quest VIII, like everything's so much more expansive, and it's so like, and I feel like they maybe did something to make the enemies less
alert,
less doggedly chasing you. Like there's times where like I've walked right past enemies, and unless they're standing and staring directly at me, they won't notice.
Yeah,
well, yeah, they have line of sight. So yeah, I noticed in the ruined Abbey dungeon, if you run behind an enemy that's like patrolling in a line pattern, he'll miss you. Yeah. Whereas in Dragon Quest VII, it didn't matter.
Yep.
Huh.
But yeah, like I can't imagine playing this game with random encounters. I don't think I would like it nearly as much.
Yeah, that's it. I think one of the reasons I eventually got turned off to it on PS2, I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah. And it's also just nice seeing those really fun looking enemies just romping around outside. Yeah. Like I like one of the photo things is like, get the cat licking himself. Like I like that charm.
Yeah.
But yeah, we can end this by talking about the last story beat for this section, which is Myella Abbey and Simpleton. Angelo kind of sucks, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does.
I do like the barroom brawl is really fun. Like
yeah that's great. That's good.
Like that's probably like he's got a pretty good introduction, and then like you learn more about him and you're just like, oh no, he's like a pompous asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know. He doesn't bother me too much. I honestly was more put off by how, ineffective Dual Magus is as a villain. He seems like an awfully,
he doesn't do much, does he?
He has a really high pitch and shrill voice, and that's not menacing at all.
Dual Magus.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that he's literally ineffective at his job as the self-appointed villain in the story.
Yeah.
He has an opportunity to wipe your party several times, you know, as you're just standing there agape at what he's done to the abbot.
Yeah.
And he doesn't, he just flies out the window.
Yeah. And like goes walks on water again.
I feel immediately compelled to compare him to Kefka because he's
A
clown villain.
Kefka was a
clown villain that felt like an honest to God psychopath killer, and Dual Magus just feels like an anime cliche.
And I do feel bad. Kefka? Like we're basically
Final Fantasy VI.
We're comparing Dual Magus.
You need to correct that, Zach.
We're basically comparing Dual Magus to like the best villain in RPGs ever.
Oh,
okay. I mean, but Dragon Quest.
No. He's no Smithy.
But I mean, isn't Dragon Quest VIII often considered to be one of the best?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's an apt comparison.
I can't think of another video game villain to me that compares with Kefka.
No, you're right. I have a hard time believing Dual Magus is the villain of this game at this point. I feel like he's the villain of Act One.
Yeah. It's a pretty big. Like I got to pronounce the name wrong because I've only read very agonym. How do you?
Yeah,
like to the agonym, past. Yeah. I've never had to say that out loud. I just realized that.
I always go with a Ganym.
Yeah, I think I think in my head it's like Aghanim or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, he feels like the villain of Act One, and I don't know how obvious that is to everyone else or if it's just me who thinks that, but
well, I mean that's Dragon Quest trope too.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's usually like the underlying games.
I played 9 about 10 hours in, and I beat Dragon Quest 1, which does not follow that trope.
Dude, yeah. Remember in Dragon Quest 9 where you get to the final boss and you're like, who are you?
Yeah. Dragon Quest does that a lot. Where it's just what like, oh, no, yeah, that's the real final villain. Okay. Would have been nice to buy him all game.
I would say that the music, the reaction of the characters, the animations surrounding Duel Magus are fantastic, but you're right, they're not fitting to him.
Yeah. He's a crappy villain.
Yeah.
He just goes and kills very specific people and then bails. But then like there's the moment with Jessica's brother where he's just like, "Ah, oh, it's a pity I have to kill you." And it's just like, but you don't kill anyone else except for like, the people that you have to like that like are clearly part of your goal to kill.
Yeah.
I don't think he was there, well, unless I learned something else. I mean, it doesn't seem like he was really there to kill him. He was there to like play with the statue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he kills him like
for no reason.
Yeah, he kills him for no reason. Yet he has this opportunity to like kill Marcello and
that's true.
And the party, and he just kills the abbot and leaves. But anyway. Yeah, so that's where
thank
we left
God
you.
It's an Aghanim situation.
Stay tuned for next time as we, I guess, finally reveal that Duel Magus is an Aghanim situation.
Maybe they replace him with Kefka.
Like, I legitimately don't know, but I don't know for 100%, but obviously by what Zach's saying, like, it's true, but like, good.
I'm really looking forward to hearing your guys' take on the mole dungeon and the final boss. Have you not gotten there yet?
That's where I am right now.
Oh, it's so great. It's okay. Like all right. Straight out of Super Mario RPG.
All right.
Zach, so does Duel Magus sit on whoever the Ultimate's villain does he sit like next to him like Salacious Crumb?
No.
I'm just kind of giggle.
Actually, I'll say game no. Is Jabba the Hutt.
But it's been a long time. I could be wrong.
All right. So let's set the barometer for where we're going to be when we talk about this game next time. Zach, because you're a little bit ahead of me. Do we want to have it be like the end of Trodane Castle is where we pick up next time?
Yeah, Trodane, or at the very least...
More when you get on the boat.
When you get on the boat is a while. I mean, that's even a long time after Trodane because you have to go back and do some other things. But
the mole dungeon.
Yeah. So I'd say either get path through Trodane, or we could just do the Swordsman's Labyrinth because by then people will have to experiment with the monster arena.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Although you really don't get all your monsters until Trodane Castle.
Yeah, let's do after Trodane Castle.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's where if you want to start playing along with us, Gab, for next time we talk, you can join the conversation. Wherever you're listening to this, like go to NintendoWorldReport.com or the YouTube page or the Patreon page that wherever this will be posted, leave a comment. And we'll bring it up next time. But yeah, get to Trodane Castle if you can, and then you can play along with us, and that'll be our goal to get to sometime in the next week or two. Yep. So,
and I'll be personally very excited because if I play to whatever the thing is that you just said, it'll be the most time I've ever put into a JRPG since like Final Fantasy VI, I think.
Damn.
Here's hoping my busted 3DS doesn't get in the way of meeting that goal.
We'll have to remind ourselves to talk about the tension system next time because I do have just a couple of things to say about how it compares to other Dragon Quest games.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah. We'll make a note of that. Maybe I'll screw around with it more because I've dealt with enemies using it, but I've sporadically used it only kind of when I'm just like, oh, I wonder what this does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. So we'll talk about the next time. Andy, Zach, and Nathan, thank you for joining me, and I look forward to talking more about Dragon Quest with you guys in the very near future. This game rocks.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.